everybody hear me? Are we on here? Okay. Hey, we're actually short one voting member to have a quorum. But I told Todd that you've got these parliamentary procedure rules, sometimes called Robert's rules is one form. And I said, let's not use those. Let's use Roger's rules. I mentioned that before. So Todd said, no, we better not take official action until Sue Sorensen arrives. But there are some important things we can do. So I think we'll go ahead. We'll call the meeting to order. We'll skip the things that need a vote, like minutes, and we'll adjust the agenda just slightly. It's been suggested that we move item 8 up before 7. So
okay, we're on.
Oh, okay, cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Cecilia, you saved us.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, we're good. Yeah, okay. So we're gonna follow the agenda now. We'll call the meeting to order officially and ask for comments or a motion to approve the minutes. Let's also, in the same motion, approve the agenda with one suggested change, moving item 8 up prior to item 7. Kind of makes sense. Do we have a motion to that effect?
I shall move.
Okay, Roger moved and Dean seconded.
Seconded.
Any questions on that motion that includes both the minutes from last time and the agenda within an adjustment? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. And next meeting is noted right at the top is September 19th, and we're going to have that at a different location. Nibley Public Works, is that different from City Hall?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, okay.
We'll get you the address and stuff.
Okay, so Nibley has a brand new city hall, or fairly new, but I don't know where their public works building is.
Cool.
It's their old city building.
Oh, is it the old
city? It's to the west of it.
Oh, okay. All right, they didn't want to give us the first class room at all. Okay. We'll go wherever they tell us, so thank you. Any questions or comments? Item 5 there for management or board members. From the audience, from anybody. We're really fortunate to have a brand new board member, and her name is Lee Erin Hansen, and she represents Millville City. And I'd ask Lee Erin to take just a minute and share a little bit of information about herself and her family and how she got this assignment, if she doesn't mind.
Do you want me to stand up?
Well, yeah, it might be nice. They kind of speak.
We're going to put you through this, so stand up.
No, just speak into the microphone. You can all hear
you. I'm like nervous.
So we all hear
you. I'm like nervous.
Yeah, pull it closer.
A little soft shoe, you know.
Okay. I don't know if you can hear me. So my name's Lee Erin Hansen, and I guess, so I grew up in Las Vegas, and I came up here to Logan. In 2006 for schooling, and I graduated with a degree in history and political science, and met my husband in our history of French Revolution class, so I like to joke about that, but yeah, and we have 4 kids, 3 boys and a girl, ages 9 to 3, and from 2010 to 2013, we moved to Lubbock, Texas, so he could do his JD, an attorney, and a master's degree in personal finance. So we've been back since and bought a house a couple years ago in Millville. We love it. And I drove for the CVTD while I was in school and a little bit after that for a couple of years, and I loved it. So it's a great job. And yeah, I'm really excited. In fact, my husband saw the advertisement in our post office for needed, and he came home and he was like, "Oh, Erin, you'll love this. You've got to do this." And so that's how I, you know, found out about it. And so I'm really excited.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to have someone with such broad experience, you know, within the system and without. So we're really pleased to have you. I think it would be well if all of us went around, just tell your name, who you represent, maybe how long you've been on the board, if you remember. Sean, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah. Sean Bushman, I represent Irene, and I've been on the board 12 or 13
just approximately, it's fine.
12-ish.
Okay.
And I'm Cecilia Benson, and I just have been on since January, so just new too. And I'm from Logan.
I'm Craig Wright, Hyde Park representative. About 3.5 years, I think.
I'm Ron Natale, I represent Richmond, and I've been on the board for about 3.5 years.
I'm Holly Brimhire, and I represent Lewiston, and I don't know, I've been on maybe 12. I don't know if it's before or after Sean.
Okay, so a good experience. Roger Jones, I represent Logan City. Been on, I think, about 10 years.
Tom Butler, I'm the general manager.
How long have you been on the board?
Represent Logan, I'm Glenn Schmidt, and I think 6.5 or something like that.
Dean Quill, I represent Logan also. I've been on the board this time, I think, for about 1.5 years.
This time.
I'm Patrick Jenkins. I represent Logan as well, and I've been on since the first of the year.
I'm Judy Simmons. I represent Logan. And I don't know how many years I've been on the board. 3 or 4? Yeah.
I'm Roger Pond. I represent River Heights, and I've been on longer than Sean. A long number. A lot of years.
Jeff Shirley represents Providence, and about 1.5 years.
Eric Cashcock represents Cache County, about 3.5 years.
Thank you all. We have some new staff people that we don't know. Let's have all the staff people that are here please introduce themselves.
My name is Tyler Wilkinson. I'm the Compliance Services Supervisor, and I oversee the paratransit service.
My name's Chad Jepson. I'm the MIS supervisor. I've worked at CVTD for 14 years. I started as a driver and then as a dispatcher until...
What was your name, sorry?
Chad Jepson.
Hey, Chad.
And then after graduating, or about the end of graduating, there happened to be an open. I got a job on the administrative side of the CVTD.
Did you sign this? Just go pass it.
And I'm Sharice Van Dyke. I'm the admin assistant. I've been working here 2 years now.
I'll stand because when I sit, yeah, you won't be able to see me anyway. I'm Nicole Tuttle. I am Human Resources at CVTD. I met you guys last board meeting. I've been with CVTD for about 2 years now.
And I'm Curtis Roberts. I'm the Administration Director. And I've been at CVTD like 10.5 years.
Thank you all very much. And we appreciate you a lot. We do need to swear in Lee Aaron, if you wouldn't mind.
That's my privilege. So I'll have you stand.
Okay.
And if you can raise your right hand, and you got your paper in front of you, so
yep.
You just read along. So I, and then state your name.
Lee Aaron Hansen.
They say I.
Oh, sorry. I'm Lee Aaron Hansen.
Having been appointed to the office of board member.
Having been appointed to the office of board member.
To the Board of Trustees for the Cache Valley Transit District.
To the Board of Trustees for the Cache Valley Transit District.
Do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of this state.
And the Constitution of this state.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
Welcome to the board.
Thank you all very much. We'll go ahead now and review the district's board governance, and Craig Wright has agreed to handle that for us.
So, policy governance, I think for some of us, foul language at this point. You're brand new. Policy governance is something that CBT took on, I think, when did we finally adopt?
March 22nd, 2017.
So, we've been doing all kinds of surveys, surveying people, surveying all kinds of stuff to try and figure out what Todd's interpretations of some of our policies are. And for new board members, some of us that have been around a while, it's starting to kind of, it feels like we're stuck in a groundhog day. And
But you have to speak into it, see?
The point is, she handed it to you.
Believe it or not, the public want to hear you.
So, we thought it might be good as a... I've heard from some folks that they feel like they don't really understand why we're doing policy governance. And I'm not sure I've got a definitive answer for that, but I think I've got some good ideas. So let's talk a little bit about it. I think one of the main things behind policy governance is we've got 19 people on this board, a huge board, and we're lay people. We're just regular folks. We're not professionals. I don't know if anybody in here has a transportation background other than being a part of this board. I don't know that. I work in parking and transportation on campus, but I'm a newbie. So you've got 19 people trying to figure out how to get their arms around this organization, figure out what's going on. You've got 19 different opinions. And Todd's group, his staff, is trying to figure out what the direction is from this board. And we need to be careful that we're not moving the target around too much. We need to be able to give them clear direction. But direction that is focused on the ownership of CBTD, the writers, taxpayers, that kind of thing. So what's our purpose? The purpose of the board is make sure that we represent our shareholders and make sure that CBTD achieves what it's supposed to and aligns to bad situations. So policy governance is supposed to help us figure out how to do that. And those of us that went through the policy blitz, have gone through all of this, may remember that there were basically four sections of our policy manual. And those four sections of the policy manual are supposed to help us do this. Figure out, make sure that we're achieving the results that we're supposed to achieve and we're avoiding bad situations. So, ends and means are one of the things that we do. Ends policies is section one of our policy manual. Basically, ends are just what we're trying to accomplish, who that's for, and what it's worth. Any questions about what that means?
At what worth or what it's worth?
At what worth. Basically, it's not just financial. I mean, right. This is a quasi-governmental organization, right?
I don't think it's quasi. I think it is a governmental organization, isn't it?
It is. So taxpayers are paying for this. Grant money's coming in. We're doing all this stuff. We're spending funds. But as an organization, our ownership, taxpayers, people of this valley are looking at CBTD for more than just dollars and cents, right? They want to make sure that it's safe, it connects our community, it provides some kind of connection across Cache Valley. It helps people that are disabled. It helps people that don't have a way to get around. So it's more than just dollars and cents, right? So that's what that worth is. We need to evaluate, as a board, we need to evaluate, are we doing the things that they want us to do at the right price? Okay? And then means are the other three sections of our policy. Sections 2, 3, and 4 are all the stuff we do to make sure that that's happening and make sure that we're doing it right. Todd and his crew is doing it right and that we're behaving the way we should as well. Okay? So, I basically just outlined these really quickly. Section 1 determines what our owners want. Section 2, we set up boundaries for what the CEO and his staff cannot do. So for those of you that are new, if you've done the surveys lately and you keep seeing all these things that say, that come across in a negative way, the CEO shall not allow this to happen. That's why. We're setting up the boundaries that Todd and his staff work within. We're setting up those boundaries and we're saying, you have to play within this area. We're not going to tell you what you can do. We're just going to tell you what you can't do. So that's how that works. Any questions about that?
All right. Okay, Craig.
Yes.
We set the boundaries up, and then he tells us how he's going to live in the box.
Right.
And then that's what we're looking at, is that interpretation. Do we accept that interpretation? And then he tells us the supporting documentation that will support that interpretation. So when we're done with the interpretations, then we'll start reviewing the documentation annually or quarterly or semi-annually.
That is correct. So we have, you know, we're going through all these documents. We've got all these huge documents. We have a schedule. We're going to hit those month by month. Once we've got all of Todd's interpretations and we all agree that he's understands what we want. And then we'll start monitoring to make sure that we're getting those results. Section 3 is we set up the rules for how we operate as a board. Are we doing board business? Or are we figuring out what kind of bus stop canopies Todd should be using? Because that's not really board business. That's operational stuff. So we set up those rules to help us make sure we stay on track with what we're supposed to do as a board and we stay out of Todd's business. And that's the last thing that emphasizes that. Basically, we've got ownership up here, we've got the board, we've got Todd down here, and we delegate all of the responsibility to run the operation to Todd. And then we just watch to make sure that he's doing it. Any questions about any of that so far? Great. So I wrote how you're going to act on this next one. We're going to act in the best interest of CVTD's ownership. And when I say that, I mean we're going to act in the best interest of the consensus of what most of the ownership of CVTD wants. Not just a handful of people you might have in your neighborhood or at work, but you're going to take the time as a board member. You have a responsibility to understand what your constituency expects. What are their values? What do they expect from CVTD? And then you will work to make sure those are represented here. We're going to have an outward vision rather than an inward vision. That means, once again, emphasizing we're looking at governance as a board, not operations. We're not telling Todd how many lug nuts every wheel must have. All right. We're going to encourage a diversity of opinion. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. Section 3 is how do we work as a board? And we need to encourage that diversity. But we also need to make sure that we speak with one voice. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. We need to make sure there's that clear distinction of roles between the board and the CEO and his staff. We're going to look toward the future rather than in the past. And we're going to be proactive in how we work. And that's difficult to do as a board because we're meeting for an hour to an hour and a half a month. So we need to be efficient with our time. All right. So let's talk a little bit about speaking with one voice. We have a section in our policy manual, and I encourage you all to dig that out if you haven't recently and review those values. It's a placeholder right now, because at the time we adopted the policy manual, we only had a handful of things left over from our old policy manual that we plugged in there. It'd be good for us to dust that off at some point and review that and see if we need to expand that at all. So I encourage you as board members to speak with your constituency, political leaders in your area, people at work, people in your neighborhood, get a broad perspective of what's going on with regard to CVTD, and come prepared to discuss those in a values conversation down the road. Ron, if you'll help me remember that, okay. I need to see when it's appropriate if Roger's interested in having that on the agenda at some point. We need to all voice our opinions that reflect that our ownership. Once we make a decision as a board, we need to speak with one voice. So
basically what that means is let's talk about it as much as we need to talk about it here in our board meetings. And if the board meeting goes a little bit long, that's okay. We need to make sure that we're covering the issue. But a couple of things need to happen. We need to make sure that we cover it fully. But if the bulk of the board members feel like it's not board business, then feel free to speak up and say so. We're not very good at voicing our opinions on all of us. So I'm going to encourage all of you to speak up when issues come up. So it's important that you provide input and make sure that we have a well-rounded view of everything we do, that when we vote on something, we've considered all the opinions and options.
Dr. Craig?
Yes.
On that same issue, I would encourage board members, you know, we don't have to answer the question or resolve the issue that night. We can table it for a discussion for the next month if we wish. And if it needs to go to a committee or a committee, ad hoc committee needs to be created, that's great. But we need to get our voices heard and our opinions out there and really work and massage it in the correct way.
I think it's critically important that you add the word respectfully heard.
Yes.
Because I think that's critically important. I think it's one thing to speak your mind, but it's another thing to feel dismissed. So being respectfully heard, I think, is important.
Thank you. And not always easy to do when you're passionate about an issue. So, but I agree. So, but once we've made a decision as a board, we've voted on it, you don't have an opinion anymore, at least out in the public. So we voted that into our policy manual. So unless we change that policy, that is our policy. So please take this seriously. It's important that we're very careful about the messages we convey to the public. And if there's something that we're not doing correctly and you feel strongly about it, bring it up here. But be prepared to defend your position. And we as board members need to be prepared to speak up on either side of the argument. Questions? Comments? Okay. So one last bit. There's a copy of the parliamentary rules that Roger mentioned. Not Roger's rules, but Robert's rules. Nice try. So I've asked Charisse to include a copy of that in our packet. Sorry I didn't get that into the packet before, but just to include that here, please review that and get familiar with it. I think the only way we can move quickly with the hour and a half we have every month is for us to use Robert's rules to make sure that things are orderly, that everything is considered, and that we vote on critical issues. If you feel like something is being dismissed too quickly, speak up. If you feel like we're rabbiting on too long about something, speak up. Feel free to move the Craig sit down right now. Mm-hmm. If you feel like that's what needs to happen. But it's important that we use those. There's a lot of rules in there. I'll be the first to admit I don't know very many of them. But I think it's important that we learn to use those and move quickly. Any questions? Policy governance is going to take some time, at least the way we're going right now. And maybe that's a conversation we need to have or spend a little bit more time on in some other areas. We've got policy 3.0 that talks about how we work as a board. Maybe it's time for us to review some of those as well. But we do need to get Todd's interpretations done if we're going to continue this. So I'll leave it at that, unless anybody has any questions or comments.
Yeah, why don't you stay there just a minute? So I appreciate that summary, and I know Craig and Ron have spent a lot of time trying to understand policy governance for the past couple of years and helping us understand it. So I think that was an excellent overview. Thank you. Any other questions in general about policy governance? And we didn't make this part of our motion, but it seems to me while Craig is there and has become so proficient with that microphone now. Would it be anybody object if we go to item number 9, and have him talk about the most recent survey that we all had an opportunity to answer by email. Would that be okay? Any objections to that?
Maybe before we go there, do you mind?
No, please.
I appreciate getting up in front of the board and walking us through this. I kind of struggle with presentations like this because I can't figure out what's the problem we're trying to solve here. And more specifically, kind of feels like a condescending tone, like somebody's on your shit list. So what is the problem that we're supposed to be addressing?
Well, I've just been told that, that this is taking too long, and they don't understand why we're doing all of this.
Okay. So I'd be one that not totally understanding why we're doing it, because not from a pragmatic standpoint. I get, you know, we've created policy, and I actually see the practical standpoint of, hey, let's look at it and make sure that we're all still on board with it. And then we get interpretation from, here's how the CEO would act. The problem I have with the exercise that I don't fully understand is when we go through the survey voting, and all 19 of us vote, we just had a legislative action occur. And so you have a policy manual and then another policy manual. You literally and legally have a second policy manual now. So it feels like we're kind of creating a bigger swamp than what we should. Am I reading that wrong?
Well, I'm actually glad you brought that up. We've actually talked in the PEP committee about reviewing the results of the SurveyMonkey, and if everyone's leaning toward passing it or not passing it, or excuse me, passing it, I guess I should say, then simply put it in a consent agenda and move on, vote on it in a consent agenda. That way we're not spending any more time on it.
I don't have a problem spending time on it. I have a problem with the legal and liability that occurs when the entire board votes on it again, votes on new language, actually.
But Patrick, aren't we just sharing our opinions at this point, saying, yeah, that's how we feel about the policy, and we think the general manager's interpretation is reasonable. Isn't that all we're really doing?
I don't think so. I think that because it's a board voting, we're taking legislative action outside of an open meeting.
Yeah, I guess I don't see that. How do the rest of you feel?
I don't understand where you say you've got two policy manuals.
You have what's written in the policy manual.
Correct.
And then you have Todd's interpretation. His verbiage is yet a second policy manual. And you legally voted on it, so it's now a legally binding document to this board.
That's correct.
So you have two policy manuals. One you voted on the first time. The second we're voting on now.
No, the second one all we're voting on is the interpretation. If we change the policy, then we actually have to, and we've done that where we've actually had to vote to change the policy. So what we're doing is we're voting on accepting the interpretation, mm-hmm. that's what he now is bound to follow and produce the documents to back it up to support the interpretation. And that's what we will review next year or when we're done with this.
Okay.
So I think I see where you're coming from, but if we change the policy, we vote to change the policy. But what we're voting on is, do we accept the interpretation, or do we have to change the interpretation, or whatever it is. But once it's done and we vote on it, then that's the interpretation that he's bound to. So yes, it is. It becomes policy. His interpretation does become policy.
So we're kind of amending, if you will, by adding the interpretation into it?
I would agree that that's probably what we're doing, yeah.
That's the way I've understood it.
Yeah. So which one's the policy manual then?
The one that has the interpretation.
So you're creating a new policy manual,
now,
is my point.
So when you're bringing up a good point. So now when we're done, I would think that we would bring those interpretations into the policy manual.
Okay, I'm gonna say the policy manual are those items that we agreed to, sections 1, 2, 3, 4, that is the policy manual. We have voted to agree that those are the guiding principle policies under which we will operate. Now, because we're trying to define the playing field, we have to have some way for Todd to interpret those policies and show us that he is living within the boundaries. And that is what the SurveyMonkey is attempting to accomplish, is to help us read the policy and see whether Todd's delivery of certain documents and delivery of an interpretation of what he believes that policy means for his operation, and he's going to show it through the presentation of this document, and this document that's updated on an annual basis or however often, depending upon the policy. That's what I understand. Now, I would say that using the SurveyMonkey is an opportunity for us to think through whether those items really do reflect, do they show, when you, if you saw X document, if you saw this document right here, does that adequately reflect to you, if you see this every year, no matter how it changes, does that document adequately reflect to you the policy we have regarding motions in a meeting? And to me, we are not, we have to come back as a body, take all of that information, the PEP committee looks at the comments and assembles those, brings us back a finalized interpretation of the documents that reflect the policy, sorry, and stop me if I'm wrong. And then we vote officially to add those pieces as a part of our policy manual. It's like a subset to the policy manual. So it's not a second policy manual. It's just a clarification and addition to and a subset of our policies. Is that right? Did I mean?
That makes sense to me, Jeannie.
So. I think so. Patrick?
No, Jeannie's a very informed board member and council member, and I respect her opinion. I just think that legally we're kind of stepping outside because we're doing a handful of things. Most concerning is we're all voting, and we're all voting outside at open meetings. I think we're violating that act. But we're not
voting outside the meeting because we're bringing the results here, okay?
Well, the results and the voting are very different.
But if you notice, though, that when we come here and we say all in favor of, and I'm going to use my language, all in favor of passing the interpretation of 2.5, say aye, and all say nay, nay. Now, that's just letting everybody know how each member reviewed it and how what they, because if you notice, it says accept, you know, we're not saying pass, pass, or whatever. So when we come here, we're voting on the interpretation and what we've come up with, and that's the interpretation that stands in the manual. Because even though you've put it in the SurveyMonkey, when I first originally got into this, I thought, great, we'll just do the SurveyMonkey, and everyone says, yeah, and they said, no, you can't do that because it's got to be done here.
Would it be appropriate, let me interrupt if I may, would it be appropriate to ask Todd, direct Todd, to get an opinion from our legal counsel related to this, and a little, get his opinion at least. We could discuss this for some time.
If you don't mind, I think that in deference to the board before you engage legal costs, you know, this is just my opinion and my interpretation. You probably ought to have board approval to go spend legal dollars on it. It's just my opinion, and if it merits discussion, fantastic. If it doesn't, that's okay. I'm not going to have my phones won't get.
Feel free to make a motion that we do or do not.
Okay, I will
ask
move
for an hour
that. I will move that the board instructs Todd to contact our legal counsel and ask if it violates the Open Meetings Act, and ask if this effectively is creating a second policy manual.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second it.
Okay, motion and second. Any further discussion on that? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and vote. All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
One no. Any abstentions? Roger said no, which is fine. Thank you very much. So we'll kind of stop that discussion now and leave it to you to bring us back an opinion, or feel free to invite him to a future meeting if that's appropriate to share. So thank you. So is it okay if we go ahead with item 9 and continue what we've been doing, and then we'll still ask the question later if it's appropriate. Craig, would you Sure. Abbreviate.
Do you mind if I sit down?
Not at all. Notes? That's fine. So Sue, we're on item 9 right now. We're going to talk about the survey that there's some question on, which is very appropriate to raise questions.
Okay, so with regard to section 2.5 in the policy manual, I had mentioned in the presentation that we discussed as a PEP committee the option of putting this into a consent agenda. Since we don't have a consent agenda, I'd like to move that the board consider the adoption of Todd's interpretation of 2.5. As it stands.
So we're trying to simplify things, and so we're looking at this page right here, and Todd and I were wondering if Charisse could number pages, because we do end up with a lot of pages in the future. So see if that works, Charisse, if you don't mind in the future. So you're simply saying, without a whole lot of discussion, pretty much everybody accepted, one abstained, one needed further information or board discussion. So, but since the majority said okay, you're making a motion. Was that right?
Yes.
You're making a motion.
I'm moving that we adopt the interpretations.
Okay.
For 2.5.
We have a motion to adopt the interpretation that we all received by email, had a chance to comment on. And is there a second to that motion?
I will
motion?
Second that.
And we have a second, Cecilia. Let's have a little discussion if there is any. Anybody want to discuss that motion, concerns, anything?
I did have a concern. On page one of it, the first page of this, there's one comment here that asking for another audit. And I would just like to know if there's some specific concerns that we should have that maybe need to be brought before the board for discussion for another audit.
Well, I thought it was interesting, and I didn't make a comment regarding this, but we have scheduled various types of audits through the Finance Committee. We've picked out different portions of the operation and decided to audit that portion of the operation either annually or biennially or something like that. So I do believe that we do more auditing than just the one that we see and have to pass in the spring.
The external audit report
right.
You're referring to. Yes,
thank you, Jean. So I do think we do some performance auditing, but I don't know whether we've, you know, I don't know that we've completed one since I've been here. So did we complete one?
No.
My brain is not working.
You did an internal review a few years ago, and you looked at several things. We haven't done anything that specifically looks at a performance audit type level. Correct me if I'm wrong there, Curtis, but we haven't done anything specific. We've talked about that, and the last time we talked, the committee recommendation to the board was there was not anything of concern at this time, and then the board concurred of not moving forward with anything. But again, you have the ability at any time to, if you do want to look at something specifically, you sure can. I would welcome the understanding of what those specific things are so that we can look at those.
Well, Todd, don't your funding sources periodically come and audit program-related performance?
Yeah, so we get every 3 years, the FTA, the Federal Transit Administration, will come and do what we call a triennial review. The state, we also get funding from the state. Again, it's federal funding, but they also are doing that review as well. And so we have a drug audit occasionally. So yeah, we do have multiple different agencies that are coming in and looking at things from time to time.
But don't you have financial audits every year?
Every year there's a financial audit, yeah.
And I
this
think
kind of ties in with the discussions we've had on the internal audit function. If there are concerns about our processes, some policy, something that an external, we need to invite someone in to look at. We can do that, but we haven't really identified a need nor justified the expense that may go along with that.
Okay, I think that's a good point. Is there a board member that would like to raise a specific concern that we could consider any special audit? Like we've discussed, we have various monitoring and audits regularly, and everything I remember is they've been pretty spotless. So,
Holly, let me address, I'm the one that wrote that comment, because okay. The comment was made to me by one of our constituents, basically mm-hmm. saying, so the audits we go through now are basics. There's many different types of audits. Most of what we're doing is financial audits, and a lot of that says that you put this in the right category and this in the right category.
Yes.
So every audit that we've gone through is the same ones that UTA, that are mandated that you go through, the same ones UTA's gone through. Well, there were separate audits that UTA's gone through, like legislative audits and performance audits that's conducted by the state. And we've all read about what was found out with UTA, right? All the stuff that was never in any of the mandated audits that we go through, that the same one that UTA goes through. So they said, what would happen if they went through a legislative audit where they go more in depth on performance and everything? And so that was why I put that in there. It does two things, you know. If you come through an audit like that, boy, that's and you pass it, you know, that's a good feather in your cap to have, you know. And so that's the reason that was put in. That was why my comment. Thought, okay. And see, we don't even control that. The state auditor, they can decide on their own to come in, and mm-hmm. it doesn't matter whether we want it or not.
Well, yeah, but there was no specific reason for it.
No specific thing. But it just might be more truth-telling, you know. Yeah, not that there's something that is sinister or something's looking, but more like I say, it could be a feathered hat in your cap, you know.
When you say performance audits, give me an example of what you mean by, what are they going to look at? I mean, I've done management audits, I've done systems audits, I've done product audits, I've done process audits, and, you know, all of those audits I've done in my career. So when I hear performance, I want to understand what you mean by performance.
It's not what I mean. Has nothing to do with what I mean. You would have to go down to the state legislature and find out what a state legislative audit is comprised of, or talk to the state auditors and find out what a state audit is comprised of. It's not me. I can't tell you what it is. They're the ones that can tell you that.
So we could talk about this for a long time, and if there's a reason to, but I don't hear any specific concerns being raised. Eric suggests it'd be another feather in our cap to have one more audit. Well, my concern is audits consume a great amount of staff time. I think possibly a waste of resources. It could be bad public relations to have one, unnecessary, unless somebody points out a specific concern. We have adequate audits. We have adequate monitoring that I've seen. And
Roger, could I say...
Please.
UTA differs from us in one critical respect, and that is they charge fares. And they have...
One more, if I may add that. Plus, they're a billion-dollar operation.
That's true.
Every year.
They are a billion-dollar. But I don't know whether the state views it differently because of our fare structure, so that they would not even, you know, whether they would consider doing that sort of thing or not consider doing that sort of thing. I don't know if it has any relevance to the whole issue or not.
I think somebody'd have to point out, here's a concern, do you want to look at that concern? You know, rather than, we'd love to have you come in and take a look at our wonderful operation. So
Roger.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just one
comment,
another
Roger.
Question.
Over here first. Then
yeah,
Dean.
Where are those audits available if constituents would like to see the audits that have already been done to perhaps address that concern? Are they openly available, all of the audits?
We tried to put the most recent stuff online, but you can get them at the state auditor's website.
Awesome.
We can definitely make it available. If constituents are concerned, they can come down and meet
you can show them anything.
We have no concern that way.
But are you talking, Cecilia, are you talking about?
We need to go to D first, if that's okay, Ron.
Okay. Sorry, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Did that help, Cecilia?
Yes, that's good. So it's an openly available document, so if that helped your person that was concerned, perhaps that would be a good place to guide them.
Okay, Dean had a comment.
My comment is that we're talking about finances here, not performance. And I don't think what we're talking about, a performance audit is not germane to this section that we're discussing. We're talking finances. And if you're talking about performance, that's a different category in my mind.
Okay. So if we're going to follow parliamentary procedure, do people want to vote on the question?
Let's call the question. I call the question.
Okay.
Yep.
We're calling the question. And so do we have to have a second to call the question? A two-thirds vote is required for passage. So he's suggesting, Craig, that we vote on the motion that's on the table. All in favor of voting on the motion that's on the table, say aye.
Well,
aye.
What is the motion on the table?
You forgot already?
The motion on the table was to
accept. Roger forgot.
I remember.
Was to accept Todd's interpretation for policy 2.5.
Okay, thank you. It's always wise to restate it.
Okay,
I say aye.
But we're not voting on the motion. We're voting on whether we should vote on the motion. Question
voting
number.
Voting to end debate.
That's why I don't like parliamentary procedure that much. So we're ending debate. All in favor of ending debate and eventually voting on the motion, say aye.
Aye.
And two-thirds of us have to agree. I think two-thirds did. Okay. All right. Now we'll vote on that motion that Craig re-articulated a minute ago and was seconded by Dean, right? Oh, who's second? Oh, Cecilia. Thank you. The motion is just to accept that page, wherever it is. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. And if anybody has specific concerns, we talk to the general manager. You know, our auditor would come in and talk to us about specific concerns. The state transportation people would. So let's deal with those specific concerns and not just innuendo or rumor or whatever. Thank you very much. Okay, so Craig, do you want to go ahead? You've done that. We're done with Craig. Okay. Let's talk about board training, consideration for adoption of new board information, Sean, which is item 7. Yeah.
I'll take it.
So you've got 4 pages of green titled text. This was something we've been pondering and discussing in the executive committee for a little while, but because there's with 19 board members, we get turnover of a few every year, we thought it would be not unwise to prepare a shorter introduction to this system. Now, this is a challenge to write. I do science writing, which is passive, dry, and objective. Work. That's probably a good way to put this together, but it's not possible to make it unbiased. And so you'll see as you read it, there might be some of my favorite biases. However, what I'd like to ask is, first of all, has anybody read it?
Yes.
Those who have been on the board, I'd like to ask everybody what they think and to send me corrections, comments, ideas. First of all, that's by email, and I think you all have my email. If you don't, if you lost that paper, I can give it to you after the meeting. The goal would be to get some feedback a little bit here, more during this next month, and then try to pass this as something that we can, a document we can share with people as they start it next month.
So you want us to review what you've written, edit, comment, and you'll get it and massage it again.
Yeah, I'll try to put together. I'm fairly certain we'll have different comments about certain areas. You know what I mean? Not everyone will have the same comments, but yes, I'll massage it. This is a tricky document. If it's too long, it's useless. If we get too much detail, it's another policy manual. Thank you for that. Yeah, we don't want that. So it's really just a way to help you understand kind of some of the things that we do. And And so those of you that are relatively new, I'd especially appreciate your perspective. By through reading this, have you learned something? Has it been useful? Those of you who have been on for a while, do you think there's something we ought to talk about that's not in here? Is there something in here that we should remove? So please send me those ideas. I'd also love to hear the perspective of the operations staff, if that's not appropriate to ask.
So, Sean, once this is done, we're going to use this as kind of like an informational sheet for all of us, plus new members as they come on board?
It's mainly intended for new members that come on board, but it will give a copy to everyone that you can cherish and frame.
I plan on doing that.
May I ask, while you're there, was this information used at the most recent training that three board members attended?
It was used in the most recent training that one board member attended.
Oh.
Just today.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, there was another recent training that Patrick attended, Cecilia attended, and who else? Ron. And Ron attended.
That was different. We didn't have this put together at that point.
All right. Do the three of you have any comments about the training you attended? Patrick, we'll ask you. Was it helpful?
It was very helpful, although after my hard line on the policy manual, one wouldn't think I learned anything. It was a great education on interpersonal communication and conflict resolution and how we perceive situations, whether we're facing them for our own benefit or the broader benefit of the organization. So I appreciate the invite down there, and it cost money, so I appreciate the Utah Trust in funding it on the board. So thank you. That was an excellent training for me.
Thank you. Cecilia, any comments? Did you find
it was amazing. Like, I read two of the books, and I just wish I could rewind 50 years. It was that life-changing in how to work with groups to accomplish the common purpose. Like, even coming here tonight is just a different feeling. It's in our home, it's a different feeling, and it was a great, again, just thank you. It was a super opportunity to learn these things. The books are remarkable, even if you didn't do the training, just to grab one of the three books. It was really good in how to work together as a group.
What are those books?
It's an Arbinger series. The first one.
First one is leadership.
What are they called?
Leadership and self-deception.
Yes.
The next one is outward mindfulness.
Outward mindset.
Outward mindset, and the other one is the anatomy of peace, and it applies to every relationship that you have and every organization that you work in, as far as valuing people as people and not as objects, and utilizing every person's abilities to accomplish the common purpose. So it was fantastic. It was really a gift.
That's some great videos.
If you want a copy of Leadership and Self-Deception, let me know, and I'm happy to get you one. And if you want to attend the training in the future, I'm happy to make that available again. So
Utah Trust, did they do it?
Yeah.
Do you want me to tell the story that happened?
I did want you to share that at some point.
Is this that point?
Feel free.
People were there from all over the state, you know, from one end of the state to the other. And at break time, I was speaking with someone from the utility department at Washington City, which is, I guess, is pretty close to Ogden. Anyway, she just said, I just feel so grateful, because she said that you're here from the transit department. She said, you need to know that your transit department has made a difference in the lives of our family. She has an autistic son that said that they didn't know if he would ever be able to function on his own. But she said, because of the transit, the free transit that's here and the special care that's given to this son, he is able to go to work every day. He's able to take advantage of the things at Utah State University that are helping him to function here on his own. She just couldn't say enough about the difference that makes in this special needs son's life. And she said, I'd love to come over that mountain and feel the caring that is in there. She said the bus system has made a difference in the lives of our entire family, and I thought that's what this course was about. It is about focusing on the purpose, utilizing the people that we have to work with, and it was very, it was really neat to hear that what we're doing really is so far beyond policies, procedures, and that it is keeping our constituents safe and mobile to make a difference in their lives, and it's neat to talk to her.
Wow, thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. Any other comments before we move on? Let's go to budget goals, item 10. Todd, our general manager.
I'm actually going to get Curtis up here as well, in case he needs to answer questions. But so we're working on the budget for this group, and one of the things that we do every year as a staff is we try to establish budget goals. Believe it or not, we have a lot of debate as to what the priorities should be and how should we use these resources. Obviously, like any organization, our budget is limited. We don't have unlimited funds, and so we're having to deal with tough questions, you know, and where should we put resources. And so several years ago, we found that by us coming together and setting some budget goals, it really helped the discussion when we came to areas where we were trying to figure things out. We said, well, let's go back to the goal. What's going to help us achieve our goal? But really what we want to do with this group is to maybe go through these goals with you, and then whether you consider adopting them tonight or whether you need more time, but we would like at some point for you to formally give us support on these goals or change them and say, well, no, we think this should be a little different, or you should add this or take away that. And so maybe I'll let Curtis kind of go through those, and you guys can ask us questions, and then decide whether you want to more time or whether you want to adopt them or change them. So I'll let Curtis kind of lead us through that.
Fantastic. Can everybody see it's a two-page document? The bottom of the first page says one. And
it's just one page.
One page. Yeah. Oh, okay, I thought this was
really. We will get page numbers on there in the future. It says draft on across it.
Did everybody find that? So, the first ones are fairly standard to us. Obviously, we're receiving federal funds, and so in order to use those federal funds, we're required to provide match. That can vary anywhere between 50% up all the way up to 80%. Typically, we do every once in a while get 100% grants, but they're pretty rare. So we have to provide matching funds, so we've got to make sure there's enough match for any federal grant expenditures that we have. That's always a number one priority. Failure to do that then would invalidate the grant, which we don't want. We would never put the district at that risk.
And some of those examples are bus replacements, you know, facility maintenance, things of that nature. So those are all planned out.
Then obviously, next part goes hand in hand with that, in which we're going to comply with applicable laws and regulations. The current Transportation Act that we're functioning under is labeled the FAST Act. So that when you see FAST Act, that relates to the transportation bill that the United States Congress has passed and it's been signed into law. We also always look at applicable state laws, any other regulations, and so one of the key things in the FAST Act is a state of good repair. We're required to report the state of actually how our assets are functioning. Are they maintained, or are they beyond their useful life, or are they expired? And we actually have to report that now. And so our goal is to always maintain our assets to where they're in a state of good repair. So we'd be doing more exception reporting, which means that we've got an asset that's out of compliance for whatever reason. And then obviously we're going to allocate funding to comply with the Records Management Act, transparency, and other applicable laws. Those are more state-related. But they do take time to comply with. For example, if we get a records management request, even though we may be able to bill for some of that time, there's a lot of provisions in the law where we can't recover all the costs. And so we have to make sure there's time allocated to that. So we have to have staffing resources. And in recent years, those requests have been increasing. So we make sure that we have adequate staffing to handle those needs. The third one, this is more of a discretionary one. It's one that we feel important, or we feel is important, sorry. What this relates to is we always are receiving federal grants on, based off of an allocation basis. However, for example, in this federal fiscal year, which started last September, last October 1st, will end this September 30th, the actual authorization bill and the funding didn't get released until July. That's when Congress finally formally authorized all of the funding. So we always retain a year's worth of grants that we haven't really applied for, so that when we're coming into this point of the year, we have that whole bank of grant, well, most of that bank of grants ready to fund for the next year. And then if anything ever happened where Congress didn't get everything passed, something shut down, we'd still have those grants in place to where we could slowly taper down the service that we were providing and give people at least a year to adapt to that lower funding level or the lack of funding thereof, so that we're not going to impact the citizens immediately or cause a financial strain on the system. So that $1.2 million that you see there, that basically would help fund our operations for a year as we would taper down. We think that's a good strategy. It makes it to where we would have less impact to the citizens in case something went south, and so it's a contingency plan. It doesn't do anything as far as affecting our federal funds, so they're still there, they're still ready to be applied for. It's just a bank it's money that would be available to be applied for, if that makes sense. We think that's a solid strategic plan. And if we did decide to tap into that, it would be and you wanted to accelerate some of that spending, it'd be one-time use money. We wouldn't want to do that on an ongoing basis. It's not like we could double what we're doing. It's more of a safety net position.
So, Curtis, you talk about it as federal grants to be applied for?
Yes.
So it's not money you have?
It's an award letter that we have. It's just that we haven't gone through the formal application process to actually allocate that funding for what it would be specifically used for. So we get an award letter that says, this much money has been allocated to the transit district.
Right.
But then we have to go through an application process to tell the federal government exactly what we would use that for. Whether that would be for operations, bus replacement, facility maintenance, repairs to buses. We have a whole bunch of categories that we would outline to them that would be used for. Once that gets approved, then we can start spending the money. So it's kind of a two-step process.
Okay, so this money that you carry forward is money you haven't yet decided what you want to spend it on.
Exactly, and we would take the grant funding from last year and actually use it in this budget process that we're going to start implementing when we start in September.
So they don't care how long you take?
Well, they do. We can take up to 3 years. So all we're doing is taking one full year off of that, and then we have 2 years to apply for it. But they, after it's applied for and they've accepted it, we have unlimited time frames to actually spend it.
Okay.
We close out grants typically 2 years after they're applied for.
So the 1.2, is that a solid number that carries forward year to year, or is
no,
that just this year?
That's just this year. We look at it, we try to gauge risk, we try to gauge what projects we have in place. There may be years when we tap into it to make a bus purchase because we haven't lined up some other funding sources. It's just a protective measure.
Okay.
When we come down to step four, obviously we're going to comply with the board's policies. So this is where we come back into our plan our goal is to have operating revenues exceed operating expenses. Now that does not include capital. So we're looking at operating revenues, operating expenses. If any time that flips to negative, that's like running your household budget and tapping into your savings account. We want to avoid that. That's dangerous unless you're using it for one-time money. So when we say operating, that's ongoing operating revenues, ongoing operating expenses. Those should, we should, the revenues should exceed the expenditures, or at least be equal. That's kind of a worst case scenario. We like to see it increase. We like to see it exceed, because then that lets us put money away for future capital projects that we may need. And then we'd obviously also show the board what we're planning on carrying over inside the budget. If there's funds after the capital expenditures, that'd be money that would be carrying over to future years, in which we would show the board, and we've done that in the past. We're planning to use these funds for a building expansion or for bus purchases or some other capital asset need, because it would be one-time money to be spent.
But there is the possibility that if we consistently have revenues exceeding expenditures, that we could use some of that extra to expand service.
Always.
And that would not then go into that capital fund.
Correct. Exactly.
Okay.
But even in that case, we'd still want to look that operating revenues and expenses were approximately equal.
Exactly.
When we get to the next category, which is allocating resources, these are some of our priority lists, and this is the one that we'd really encourage the board to focus on. The first one, these are basically commitments that we've already made, which is to purchase 4 large buses and 4 small buses. We talked to the board that we were bringing in a replacement for these 4 buses. We have the funds allocated for these buses, with the exception of one paratransit van, which is part of my formal report of state of good repair. That bus is not in a state of good repair. It actually was involved in an accident and was totaled by the insurance company. Pretty bad accident. Fortunately, no significant injuries. But that bus has now had to go on to our replacement pattern. Fortunately, it was at its useful life, so we were able to get that through the feds. This insurance settlement was very adequate relative to the life of the bus, and actually we deem it incredibly fair. We went through an analysis of what they were offering. It exceeds what our expectations were. We won't tell the insurance company that, but we were pretty pleased with what they were offering. So we'll use those proceeds to help offset that replacement bus, but there will be, it's about a $45,000 difference, almost $50,000 difference on the difference, and that'll be reflected in this upcoming budget. We won't be able to replace that bus until after the end of the fiscal year, so it'll be included in the budget that you see coming out next month or October. We should have it to you.
September. We'll have it next month.
A very rough draft next month. So that's the first one. We are recommending that we hired a marketing firm that was in this year's budget. They've come up with a plan. We can have them come and present depending on what the board would like, but we are recommending that we would start a comprehensive marketing plan. They've given us some budget ranges to work with. We'll be coming back with our recommendation based off of that. Our recommendation is that we go forward with that so that we can improve the basic knowledge that the system is out there. We're finding more and more people are not understanding what the services we're providing, and we think that's some of the detriment to our ridership. So we think marketing is going to actually improve that. We have some technology investments. The primary key one is in our dispatching software related to our paratransit services. So this is going out to the people who need it the most. These are the paratransit vans. And what we're recommending is we've identified a couple software options. We're going to further that and narrow that down to a couple options. We recommend the budget include funding for that. One, so that we can speed up time and delivery of that. We also have some additional needs for reporting. We think we can gain some efficiencies there. So that's why it's higher up on our priority list. In doing our study of market wages this year, we went through it and refreshed all of our market data. We do have some positions, and so we're going to recommend some funding increases for our salaries and adjust that so that we stay competitive within the market. We do think that With some of the plans for service expansion, with the county passing their new tax and additional monies, we're going to be tapping out of our ability to store all of the buses at our current location. So we plan on putting money into the budget for updating our plans for the facility, trying to decide on some phasing and how that would look, so that we can start taking advantage of the property that we have out north, and use that so we can leave some of the constraints that we have at our current facility.
What is the time frame for building the new facility?
Realistically, we're starting to see some movement in Congress. We've talked a lot with the new funding, as it becomes available from the county. We could be moving as quick as 2 to 3 years.
I think that's realistic. That would be something we would be looking to do.
All that will come before the board, obviously.
Yeah, obviously, that would be
capital outlay that we'd be looking at.
How sure are we of those funds? Like, I keep hearing things that the legislature may tweak that somewhat. Are we pretty confident?
I think that's one of those things that we anticipate putting in the budget, those funds, so that effective July 1st of next year. But again, right now, the law has been enacted, and so we're proceeding based on that. But if this board directs us otherwise, we can look at that. But we're going off of what's currently enacted.
Fingers, huh?
We obviously are always looking at our safety culture. We think there's some tweaks that we might be able to do to improve our safety culture. We have implemented a system designed to reward good driving, and our proposal would have funding to continue that program. We are also getting around to where our triennial review will come back up again. And so there'll be money to help us prepare for that. The triennial review is scheduled to take place in 2020. So 2019 is actually when we submit a lot of documents, but there'll be training funds and there'll be some time allocated into that preparation. A little bit lower on the list, we think that the board could consider, and we're recommending putting in the budget, updating voter survey. We had that in this current budget. We've elected not to do it. Todd, do you want to?
I just want to, you know, Craig mentioned in his training about you represent the constituency and what are the values of that. We really find that the voter survey is a good way to get some information for you. It's just one method. There's other methods that we go about, but it's one of those ways in which you can connect to your constituency and get some information. And so that's why we find that there's value there and why we propose that we put it in the budget.
And then finally, of our allocation resources, it's providing opportunities to partner with other entities. We've, in this current year's budget, there was $75,000 allocated to work with USU on some crossing there on 700 North. And that didn't materialize this year, but we are constantly looking for opportunities to partner with other agencies. And so we'll be coming through with some of those ideas. It may include continuing to try and work with the university on those safety crossings. They've kind of delayed that project. But we're looking for other opportunities as well. And during this budget process, we think there is benefit to be gained as we partner with other entities.
We may consider, I know that Logan City's done an extensive accessibility survey, so that might be somewhere where we will have an opportunity to partner at making our bus stops more accessible.
Yeah, I met with Mayor Daines last week, I believe it was, and I think that definitely is an opportunity, Gene.
Then finally, our last point of our budget goals is, as we anticipate money coming in from this new county taxes, we anticipate that there's a possibility that revenues could exceed expenditures. We're going to come prepared to present multiple options for service changes so that we can quickly plug in approximations of how those would affect the budget, so that then when we come through with a final budget, it can be the board being able to say, yeah, we want to implement these service recommendations.
And that'll be based on the short-range transit plan, correct?
They are, or other information as it becomes available. For example, if there's something that comes up in partnering with some other entity, we may become aware of something that becomes very feasible from a cost standpoint. So, but the primary source of that is the short range transit plan.
Just a quick, I'm sorry.
Just, do you have a couple of examples of what that might
be? Of partnering?
Yeah, no, a service recommendations. Service within the bus system, like expanding service or public service?
Or changing routes or...
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm going to talk about it in the general manager's report generally, but there are some things like, you know, a voucher program for medical voucher trips, increased frequency on routes that have high demand at certain times.
Services to Wellsville.
Yeah, that's another opportunity. And to that point of partnering with other agencies, I really just want to bring up a quick example of that. And I'm going to talk about the general manager report, but Curtis has brought this up several times, so I just think it might be a good time. So if you remember Spin Bike, the orange bikes that were going around, and that was hugely successful. I mean, we were working just trying to understand how much that was being used, and they were doing 7,000 trips a month. I mean, that's significant. Now, when you look at that, some of those trips actually hurt our ridership. Right, it caused our ridership to go down. But I'm really a proponent of it, because when you look at some of the challenges you've given us is to be leaders in transportation, meeting the transportation needs. So I don't think it's always just about ridership. It's about how do we make mobility successful. And so that might be a partnership that in the future we might choose to support, because it's still providing mobility. And that's a good thing, even though it may cost ridership. Those are the type of opportunities we have to look at. How do we provide mobility to our community? And it's not always going to be through a bus. And so those are things that we are discussing, how to be successful in meeting those needs that you put out there for us. So I just thought I'd bring that up.
Okay, any other questions on the budget goals that the staff has prepared and explained, I think, very adequately? So they would like a motion on that, if we feel comfortable them going ahead, preparing a budget with these goals in mind. Is there a motion on the floor to do that?
I would move that we adopt these budget goals for the 2019 budget cycle.
We do have a motion.
Second.
Roger has a second over there. Mr. Bond. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion on the budget goals, approving them? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say no. Thank you very much, Curtis and Todd. Next item is the board chair's report. And my only thought is I probably need a copy of that book. It's called Leadership and Illusion.
I'll get it for you.
Leadership and self-deception. Leadership. I just kind of want to know where I fit. So thank you. I'll read that and assess. That's my report. So now let's go to the general manager's report.
Okay.
Mr. Butler.
We have a couple things to report. So one in here is the quarterly ridership report, and I apologize, we will get these page numbers done, but it has graphs and numbers. I'm not necessarily going to go over it unless there's specific questions, but I do think we can start providing this on a quarterly basis. We used to, and I think we would probably put it in the consent agenda, but if there's questions, I'm happy to address those. Maybe I can talk in general terms, though, about ridership. Ridership nationwide has been going down. And when it comes to ridership, there's all sorts of factors. There's a couple that I've been looking at with regards specific to Cache Valley Transit, and that's always fuel prices and then unemployment. And one thing that I've seen is that when fuel prices go up, our ridership will typically go up. But it hasn't been recently, and so I've been kind of wondering about that. That's why I started looking at unemployment. And there is a ridership loss when unemployment is extremely low. When it gets about below 4%, we start to see that ridership declines. And that typically it's hard to really analyze this fully, but what you see is people have more discretionary spending to spend on fuel. Or if auto loans are low, they can go buy a car. And so there's a lot of things that impact ridership. When you look at even people's daily trips, something as simple as is the bus going to be crowded? We're talking with people. They want a real-time app, right? They want an app that tells us where the bus is instantaneously, but they also want a bus, or I mean, an app that tells them how many people are on that bus, because folks are sensitive that I don't want to get on the bus with 60 stinky people and be stuck in the bus. People are sensitive, is there going to be a weirdo on the bus? People are sensitive, are there going to be foul-mouthed teenagers on the bus? So there's all these factors, and so it's really hard to truly tell you this is why ridership is going down. I do think for us, I'll get into that maybe a little bit more when we get into this comparison, but some of it also is a lack of convenience, and we can talk about that. So, but again, if you have specific questions, I'm happy to address them, but that's, I think, obviously ridership's a concern. And so Spin Bikes, we know that that's part of it. When Spin Bikes was here, we know that they were taking some rides, and again, I'm not going to argue that's not necessarily a bad thing. So
they rode them all downhill, so they take you take the
we did take a lot. We did take quite a few. I don't know if we took Spin Bikes on there.
No, you couldn't take the Spin Bikes, but they just leave them.
You take the riders.
Could we take them? I don't know. But we did have a we actually made an area in the transit center which our guys were very good at putting them in there, organized, and they were always full. So yeah, it's a definite impact. The other part is the quarter or the meals breakdown. That was something that you asked us to come back and do. And so again, I'll go through this a little bit. Just so you have that, I don't have a page number again, but so when you look, our annual operating budget for this year was $6.2 million. The annual meals budget was $23,000. So this is for the first and second quarter. We spent $7,809.80. So the employee banquet that we have every year for employees and their spouses, or employee and a guest, I'm sorry, is more than half of that. That's $4,100. We had about $1,500 in meetings, so we have a monthly safety meeting in which we buy some food. We have a safety and employee relation committee meeting at least once a month. We may have them more frequent, but we provide some food there. And then we have executive meetings, so there may be times when we're doing executive planning, times when we're meeting with other entities that we're doing something. When I go to the legislature, those are typically day-long meetings, and so there's lunch there. And then sometimes even board members, we've had meetings where you've been involved. So that's just kind of a general overview of the meetings. Trainings, we do provide for some when people complete new driver training, we provide a pizza one day. Dispatcher trainings, again, they can be monthly. And so there's $603 there. And then the other is really some break room supplies and then a lot of safety incentives. As Curtis mentioned, we're trying to incentivize good driving and reward that. Folks that are not having accidents, folks that are being safe out there. And so there's about $1,500 there. Is there questions that I need to go further into that? Okay. Excellent. All right. So let's see. We talked spin. I just want to give you a quick update on USU Crosswalk. So Curtis kind of alluded to that. We don't think that money's going to be needed this year because as we got into that, the university stepped back and said we need to do a little bit further study of the whole area. They wanted to do a more than just look at that crosswalk. They wanted to look at the whole corridor and say, what do we want to do with this corridor along 7th North? And so I was involved in those meetings, and in fact, I got another invitation. They've been working with their consultant, and they're going to come report back out on what that is. But one thing they made clear was that we're not going to get anything done this year with regards to the crosswalk. And so we're not going to be spending that money on the crosswalk. That's the report I have for you. You know, I was going to come back and report to you, and so that's kind of where we're at on that. Any questions regarding that? Okay. Let's see. I need to talk to you about board member training. So if you remember, July was the month in which you were to do open public meeting training. And so some of you have not done that. So tomorrow, you're going to get an email from me saying you need to do that. The state auditor's office is tracking that, and that is something that we have to be in compliance. The board chair is actually the one responsible in the code for enforcing that. Now, he's delegated that to me.
Self-deception.
So I'm going to, those of you that haven't taken are going to get an email from me. The other thing is the state code changed about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. I lose track of time. But it used to be that you only had to take the board member training once you were on the board. Now you have to take it every 4 years. And so if you haven't had board member training in the last 4 years, I will be sending you that as well and saying, hey, you need to do that. Both of these things are online. They're at the auditor's office. They're really simple. They're really not hard. It's about probably 15 minutes of your time. But I know time's hard. But when you complete those, there'll be an opportunity for you email, download your certificate. However you do it, get me your certificate. And
can we have a pizza for that one?
I'm happy to that we can reward you in some ways.
Do we have to do that annually?
The board member training only every 4 years.
No, so but the open meetings?
Open meetings every year.
Every year?
Yeah.
Okay. Now the open meeting, I went into it and I started taking it. I go, oh, this is real neat. It's informal. It's informational. It's really great. And then at the end it goes, oh, by the way, you got to take a test.
Yeah.
And I'm going, great, I didn't take notes. It's a 5-question test, and you got to pass with an 80%. You only get one question wrong.
But you can always go backwards.
You can take it.
Yeah, it's pretty
yeah,
easy.
Yeah, you can do more than one.
But for those of you like Jeannie, and who else? Anyway, Jeannie, it will work for Logan City, too. The open public meeting will work for both entities. So
we've
if you. Really?
Well, that's a problem.
It is codified for cities as well as transit districts.
So. I also have to do it for water districts.
Yeah, yeah. So once you do it, it works for everybody. So
you don't get a report saying how many times we had to take it, do you?
No, but I do.
I was going to say, how did you?
The state auditor's office did contact me and said these are the people that haven't taken it. So When we get our financial audit every year, they do check that as well. So, I mean, it is something that you need to do. So I'll gently remind you. All right, so the last thing is you have a 2-page, it says peer system comparison. And I just kind of want to talk about this for a minute. So every year, Curtis and I go to what's called the Sun Conference. It's a small urban network. In CTAA, which is the national association that we belong to, several of us got together. There's about 3 or 4 of us that got together 1 year and said, you know, we're kind of frustrated. We come to this big conference, and they have people that are, you know, senior centers all the way up. They have 1 or 2 really large transit systems that belong. But we're like, you know, some of this training that we're getting is really not effective. We want something that's specific for a small urbans. But more importantly, we want to be able to talk to our peers and really talk about the needs. So there's about 3 or 4 of us that formed this group, and now we've created this small urban network. I think this was the 4th year in which we've done the conference. And so it's for agencies that support our, that provide services to populations of 50,000 to 200,000. And so it's really our size systems. Well, this year it was in Flagstaff, Arizona. And that's close enough that we felt it was important that we took our whole executive team. So myself, Curtis, Nicole, Jody, and Mindy. We all went out there. And there was another reason. This is a very similar size system to us. They have a university. They truly are a peer. But they hit, if you remember, the stick figures, the small transit intensive city things, they typically hit 5 of those. And we want to understand that. We want to understand what they're doing to be so successful. And so we took us out there. We arranged for them to.
We only hit 3, right?
We currently are hitting 1. We our highest has been 3.
Okay.
Well, we did hit 4. Wow, see, that's amazing. We arranged separate from the conference to have them take a day and really kind of sit down with us. We sent them probably, I don't know, 75 questions and said, well, look, this is what we want to look at. They were really great hosts. But so it was a wonderful day. But one of the things, I thought I'd put this together because I think it's important. And so if you look at this, population, we serve 95,000. And this information comes from the 2016 National Transit Database. So that's the most recent reporting to the National Transit Database that is out there. So we all report to this database, and it's meant that you report the same things. It's probably as close as you're going to get to a true comparison. So we serve about 95,000. They serve 71,000 in population. Square miles, we're 33, they're 29. University enrollment, 27,000 for Utah State, 31 for Flagstaff. Now, a lot of that enrollment's off campus, we know, for Utah State. They have some off campus, so their university is a little bit larger than ours. But you can see very similar, very good comparison. They operate a fair system. So now let's get into the numbers. So in 2016, we did almost 1.7 million on fixed route. They did 1.9, so about 15% higher. Revenue hours, they're about 35% higher. And here's something that I think is interesting. They do 10-minute service during peak times. They have invested in convenience. And so when you look at a lot of that ridership is that convenience factor. Now, I think it's important to note, though, that that comes at a cost. Their productivity, when you look at ridership per hour, and that's on that second page, our ridership per hour on the fixed route is... I lost it. What happened to it? Maybe it's on the first page. Oh, it's on the first page. Our ridership per hour is 31 passengers per hour. Theirs is 27. So we're still doing more passengers per hour, but they have potential to grow. I mean, they have that convenience factor. And so, again, that's just something we hear from our constituency is how do you make it more convenient? How do you make it more come more regularly? So, again, you can look at those numbers similar. When you look at the paratransit, it's going to be similar. We're doing a little bit more passenger trips. We're doing a few more revenue hours, a few more miles. Operating expense, we're about $30 cheaper, a little bit more than $30 cheaper than them. Operating expense per mile, very similar. They're a little bit cheaper than us. Productivity, very similar. This was one thing that we found very interesting. In fact, our jaws hit the floor as we were sitting through this, and this was stuff that they provided. The staffing is what they provided to us there. So we look at evaluated positions. These are positions that are full-time staff that we're going through a formal evaluation. We have 24 full-time staff that are evaluated. They have 46. So they almost double the staff that we have. Full-time operator equivalents, we have 31, they have 40. So they have more evaluated staff than they do operator position. We thought that was really interesting. So when we look at that peer-to-peer comparison from a staffing standpoint, staffing wages, we feel like the taxpayers are getting a pretty good bang for their buck. We're a little bit lower on ridership, but not significant. We're a little bit lower on cost. A little bit more on cost. But anyway, we just thought this would be a great thing for you to have from a comparative standpoint. We think this is a true peer. They are a fair system. We're fair free. That is a difference. The other thing that I think is important to note, the Sun Conference, we do a lot of things. And there's technology and stuff like that. But one thing that I think was really interesting, we as an industry are kind of going through, like everyone else, just this transformation. We're trying to figure out how do we help with mobility. It's not just about fixed route ridership. You have things like micro transit. You have things where people are trying to understand, do we partner with Lyft and Uber? Do we partner with spin bikes? But it keeps coming back to this. And I'll say, we as an industry haven't solved it yet. And we as an agency haven't solved it yet. We're trying to figure this out. And that is, we're saying ridership tells a story, but it really doesn't tell the story of impact. And we're trying to come up with metrics that really tell the story of impact. I was so appreciative that Cecilia had that experience. She was willing to share that because, this gentleman, he's a number. He gets on the bus and we count him. But the impact we have on his life and the lives of his family that don't get on the bus are significant. And I don't know how we capture that in ridership. So I'm just here to tell you, we're trying to figure out how do we go beyond ridership? How do we really measure the impact of CVTD? And I would really welcome, if you have ideas on how to do that, we really want to understand that better. How do we measure impact in a way that's meaningful to the board, to our constituency? How do we measure that and put that out there in a way that's meaningful? So I would just say, you know, let us know if you have ideas on that. But that's kind of our report, unless you have questions.
Could I ask a question? How do you determine the square miles that you cover?
I'm going to defer to Curtis on that.
Does Flagstaff define it the same way?
There's not a ton of specific guidance on how that number is calculated. A lot of it is based off of your system map and measuring how far you typically go out about four blocks from your farthest point and measure, you know, basically north to south on the map, east to west on the map, make some sort of calculation. And we've geographically considered that's about 33 square miles. It's an approximation.
Because we go to Preston.
Technically, yes.
It just seems like we go further than 33 miles.
No linear thing.
No, I know, but...
Yeah, there's some discrepancy because technically you're supposed to measure inside of your UZA, which would basically be from Hiram up to Smithfield. So, like I said, there's some discrepancies. I'm not saying that's a perfect number. It's designed to be an approximation. You get into some of these bigger systems, and they have some planners that go through and map out exactly what it is. We don't have an additional 20-some-odd people, so we use more of an approximation matter.
Does Flagstaff do the same thing?
No, Flagstaff has a planning department of five people specifically designated to planning. We have zero.
Okay.
Here's your assignment for next meeting. Walk it with one of those little rollers.
But to that point, Jeannie, the NTD, the National Transit Database, is our best metric. It's not perfect. You're right. It's not going to be a perfect thing. It's just our best way to peer-to-peer comparison.
It seems like we have a greater than 33 square mile. Yeah. You know, just intellectually, it feels bigger than that. Yeah. So, anyway, I just asked the question.
Okay. Any other comments or questions related to Todd's
report? Very interesting. Thank you.
Jeff, please.
Could you explain briefly what the difference is, how this fare bus system versus no fare? How does the comparison go there as far as it's a peer institution, but does the fare make it a different category versus no fare, or how does that, you know what I mean?
There's not a designation between the two other than they collect fare revenue, right, Curtis? I mean.
Yeah, one of the things that's really different about the way NAPTA's set up versus how we're set up, NAPTA actually charges... They make a calculation of how much service they're providing to each of their four sponsoring entities. So the university is actually considered a sponsoring entity. And they actually charge the university for the amount of service that they are somehow getting. They've got some magical calculations in the back because they've got three more accounting people than I do. The part of what they do is the amount that they charge to the university is so significant that there's all of their college students, and it extends down in their school district's actually a partner as well. And so all of their college students and all of their high school, all their elementary, or what do I say?
Grade schools
are actually given free pass. They get passes so that they don't have to pay any extra. So when we call them a fare system, that's because anybody else outside of that structure has to pay a fare. But their university students are getting all of their trips.
So they're similar to us. I mean, their demographics are similar to us as far as ridership. So the school kids and the university students are going to make up a good portion of that. But then everyone else does. But I mean, so their ridership, we benchmark it. It's, you know, it's probably going to be similar to us. But
funding sources come from different. Ours probably come more from taxes rather than from the entities.
Yeah, that's the hard thing. When it comes to funding sources, the federal dollars can be very similar. But how people are funded locally is very different. And Curtis probably knows. I mean, is it property tax there? Do you remember what it was?
It's up to each participating entity that's inside of it to determine how they're going to fund it. But they don't have a direct funding source. They just send a bill for how much service that they're going to provide into those areas. And then that entity is responsible for paying it. So if they go to expand service, they actually go to the entity and say, here's the proposal. This is how much it's going to cost to add this service into your area. And then they get the buy-off of all those participating entities. And then contribution comes in to match whatever funding, other funding source they have.
So are they applying for the same grant monies as you?
Yes,
or are there
they
different
are.
Rules because
no, they,
of the entities?
They're the same one. So our match comes from sales tax. Theirs comes from going to those entities and saying this is how much it costs to provide this ongoing service. And then they get long-term contract interlocal agreements that as long as that service is provided, they'll continue to provide the funding necessary for that. And it's not a set amount. It's allowed to increase each year.
Okay, interesting.
Gosh, maybe we should give passes out to university students that say your bus trips are funded by the people who live in Cache County.
That's true.
Give them a bus pass.
Yeah. So just another question. So you're saying the university pays this bus system and then the school district pays the bus system
mm-hmm.
so much they allocate money?
Because they don't have a sales tax that goes across their entire base.
And then they give the students a pass.
In other words, they're buying the pass for their students.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the students are probably paying for it with their fees. But
right.
That's one step beyond what we could look
it just
at.
Gets
I think I've lost control of this meeting.
Just one more question, Todd. So what would be the impact on our system if we were to charge a fare?
Studies, you read that before. I mean, so I'll go the opposite way. Missoula, Montana went zero fare because of us, right? So a couple years ago, their mayor and city council said, we are having an air quality issue. And they had come down and they'd spent time with us and saw the success of zero fare. So they went zero fare. We've heard, this is, I think, year three, right? They're upwards of 80% increase in ridership. So our studies have shown that we would probably lose 30 to 50%, but they've seen an 80% increase by going zero fare. So I would say our studies are probably on the short side. I mean, I think it would probably be pretty significant.
Any other comments or questions? The discussion's been great. It really has. I think we've exhausted the agenda and learned a lot, hopefully. Is there any other business we ought to talk about before we adjourn?
1:30 one, and that was that Todd is actually the presenter for this whole big state thing and did a really exceptional
him
job.
And Steve Hansen did a great job.
Steve Hansen was the other one, so he really knows it, and I think that as you read the book, you can see that he understands his concept. Now he runs a meeting, so congratulations, Todd, on that.
Good job. Thank you. I will accept a motion to adjourn.
I shall move.
We have a motion. You don't really need a second, but anybody want a second? Then I'm going to exercise leadership. We are adjourned.
David Card is the guy.